see a world in a grain of sand and a heaven in a wild flower? Hold infinity in the palm of your hand and eternity in an hour. A robin redbreast in a cage puts all heaven in a rage. A dove house filled with doves and pigeons shudders hell through all its regions. A dog starved at his master's gate predicts the ruin of the state. A horse misused upon the road calls out to heaven for human blood. Each outcry of the hunted hare a fiber from the brain does tear. A skylark wounded in the wing, a cherubim does cease to sing. The gamecock, clipped and armed for fight, does the rising sun affright. Every wolf's and lion's howl raises from hell a human soul. The wild deer, wandering here and there, keeps the human soul from care. The lamb, misused, breeds public strife, and yet forgives the butcher's knife. The bat that flits at close of eve has left the brain that won't believe. The owl that calls upon the night speaks the unbeliever's fright. He who shall hurt the little wren never shall be beloved by men. He who the ox to wrath has moved shall never be by woman loved. The wanton boy that kills the fly shall feel the spider's enmity. He who torments the chafer's sprite weaves a bower in endless night. The caterpillar on the leaf repeats to thee thy mother's grief. Kill not the moth nor butterfly, for the last judgment draweth nigh. He who shall train the horse to war shall never pass the polar bar. The beggar's dog and widow's cat, feed them and thou wilt grow fat. The gnat that sings his summer's song, poison gets from slander's tongue. The poison of the snake and newt is the sweat of envy's foot. The poison of the honeybee is the artist's jealousy. The prince's robes and beggar's rags are toadstools on the miser's bags. A truth that's told with bad intent beats all the lies you can invent. It is right, it should be so. Man was made for joy and woe. And when this we rightly know, through the world we safely go. Joy and woe are woven fine, a clothing for the soul divine. Under every grief and pine runs a joy with silken twine. The babe is more than swaddling bands throughout all these human lands. Tools were made and born were hands. Every farmer understands. Every tear from every eye becomes a babe in eternity. This is caught by females bright and returned to its own delight. The bleat, the bark, bellow, and roar are waves that beat on heaven's shore. The babe that weeps the rod beneath writes revenge in realms of death. The beggar's rags fluttering in air does to rags the heavens tear. The soldier, armed with sword and gun, palsied strikes the summer's sun. The poor man's farthing is worth more than all the gold on Afric's shore. One mite wrung from the laborer's hands shall buy and sell the miser's lands. Or, if protected from on high, does that whole nation sell and buy? He who mocks the infant's faith shall be mocked in age and death. He who shall teach the child to doubt, the rotting grave shall ne'er get out. He who respects the infant's faith triumphs over hell and death. The child's toys and the old man's reasons are the fruits of the two seasons. The questioner who sits so sly shall never know how to reply. He who replies to words of doubt doth put the light of knowledge out. The strongest poison ever known came from Caesar's laurel crown. Naught can deform the human race like to the armor's iron brace. When gold and gems adorn the plow, to peaceful arts shall envy bow. A riddle or the cricket's cry is to doubt a fit reply. The emmet's inch and eagle's mile make lame philosophy to smile. He who doubts from what he sees will ne'er believe. Do what you please. If the sun and moon should doubt, they'd immediately go out. To be in a passion, you good may do, but no good if a passion is in you. The whore and gambler by the state licensed build that nation's fate. The harlot's cry from street to street shall weave old England's winding sheet. The winner's shout, the loser's curse, dance before dead England's hearse. Every night and every morn, some to misery are born. Every morn and every night, some are born to sweet delight. Some are born to sweet delight, some are born to endless night. We are led to believe a lie when we see not through the eye which was born in a night to perish in a night when the soul slept in beams of light. God appears, and God is light to those poor souls who dwell in night. But does a human form display to those who dwell in realms of day? Yes, ladies and gentlemen, you are now listening to the Ask Dr. Hal Show, live on radio. Yes, dear fiends, this is indeed your irritating horror host, Dr. Howland Owl, back after an unexpected week's hiatus. And it was my misfortune the last time not to be able to start up the instrumentality of the station here at Radio Valencia because it had been so warped, mishandled, disconnected, and perkerked. And very nearly was it that way tonight. But I traced what wires I could, though all of them now go through a hole in the desk, and it's impossible to do it as one once did. I found what I thought was the problem, and lo, everything seems to be working. It would be good if it were always this way. But in fact, dear fiends, we had an unbroken run of shows up to last week's unfortunate catastrophe, in which I, Dr. Howland Owl, detailed the voyages of Sindbad the Sailor and read his account in his own words of the first, second, third, fourth, and fifth voyage. Tonight, among other things, I intend to present the sixth voyage of Sindbad, another in which wonders and strange creatures abound. And finally, at a future iteration, perhaps next week, perhaps not, I may not even be here next week, the seventh and last voyage of Sindbad. And who knows, after that, we could do more stories from the Thousand Nights and a Night, the story of the fisherman and the genie, the story of Prince Ahmed and Perabinu, or perhaps even the story of Aladdin or the wonderful lamp. The true relation of these stories may surprise some people, because they differ so profoundly from their representation in the popular arts. Who among my listeners has read the Arabian Nights? Do you remember that Aladdin, portrayed in the movies as a thief living in Baghdad, was actually a lazy layabout living in China who loved to waste his days and was the despair of his poor, hard-working mother. But as we know who read the account, his fortunes suffered a great change, although he had to deal with the Ifrits, that race of Irish beings once under the command of Suleiman the Great, and now only reachable by the appurtenances of magic. Who created the Cave of Wonders into which Aladdin descended at the urging of the evil Eastern magician? What is the explanation for the strange things found there? And not only was there a lamp which the magician wished to retrieve, but also a ring which one could wear on one's finger, and simply to touch it would suffer another spirit, which would do all that one's heart desired. So far, our material world has not been able to duplicate these effects, and yet it might. Still, we should remember the example of that great race of alien beings, the Krell, on the planet Altair 4, the fourth planet from its main sequence star, the star Altair. They had such a system, and when it was switched on, it caused their extermination, because it immediately visualized, in addition to all their wishes and desires, all their hatreds and malevolent thoughts, which were also put into action in one terrible night that scoured the planet from their presence. We here on Sol 3, Earth, Telos, whatever you want to call it, are being offered a similar temptation. Will we have the wisdom to reject it? And even if we do not, will there be survivors somewhere? Some stories suggest that though cataclysms occur and entire races are wiped out, there are always a few in the corners and cracks who survive. But this is perhaps a word of comfort in a dark universe of howling winds and ferocious, implacable intensity. So come along with me now, Dr. Howland Owl, you have heard our invocation by William Blake, Auguries of Innocence, and similar things, as our listeners know from previous iterations, are due later. And yet, there may be other surprises. And as it has been my practice in recent days, in order that I can go over to Dermophilia, the tattoo place, and draw with the cartoonists there, I will have to shut the station down a little before my hour of expiration, just so I can clean up the mess, lock up, and walk over. During that time, I enjoy playing records, to use an archaic term, and being, in fact, the disc jockey, which I am supposedly, according to the directives put out by Radio Valencia, which, as I have always maintained, is not radio, or even on Valencia. We're actually on 22nd Street, right next to the makeout room, and you will have no trouble making out the thunderous music penetrating the uninsulated walls while we attempt to do what has never been done before, things unattempted yet in prose or rhyme. And chiefly, thou, O Spirit, who dost prefer before all temples the upright heart and pure, instruct me. For thou knowest, thou from the first wast present, and with mighty wings outspread, dove-like sat'st brooding on the vast abyss, and mad'st it pregnant. What in me is dark, illumine; what is low, raise and support, that to the height of this great argument I may assert eternal providence, and put out, for a change, an uninterrupted and interesting show. For we stand on the shoulders of giants, or maybe giant ants, or maybe just ants. Hey, follow me. I'll follow you. I invoked him now. Oh, I had the invocation just now. No need for another invocation. Each night, Father fills me with dread as he sits at the foot of my bed. It's not just that he speaks in gibbers and squeaks, but for 17 years he's been dead.
Does mean
23 years, actually. There was a clicking noise that the board was making when I was trying to revive this device, and it sounded here in the studio like the stridulating of the giant ants in the movie Then, a repeated cheeping or tweeting, and I was afraid I would have to put up with it through the entire program. I have no idea where it came from, and it may return, like the giant ants themselves. I'm sure they'll be back. Just because you wipe out a nest of them doesn't mean there aren't more somewhere.
friends.
Pick up your smartphone and get the nuclear.
Pick up your smartphone and get smart, as it were. Even though it may smart. It may hurt, as I do, bitten by bugs all over my body. Now, here is a little strange and unwelcome, unwanted sound. How can we possibly get rid of it?
The old fat show file.
Oh, that show is show enough show.
The show finally finds its voice.
It finds its voice. Crying in the wilderness.
Just like in real life.
Yes, this is real life. It may be a show, but it still is actually happening on the realistic level. On the realistic plane, unlike certain dreams of mine, which I wake and sorrow to find myself in the world of reality.
You heard my wife. What about your ground? Oh, I got 100 feet up here to the attention. Because I realize that that's too much work. Don't worry about me. I can fix it for you. I will make this time.
That's right. These robots are not programmed.
You're hearing the voice of the late Dr. Peter Goldie, formerly the science advisor on the live nightclub version of this show, the Ask Dr. Hal show. Since COVID came along, there has been no such show in this area, although I know where we could do it, but I can't seem to get K-Rob interested, and we lack a host, since apparently former Ring Monster Chicken John has burned his bridges behind him. And yet I wonder if anybody would care at this point. He was afraid if we were doing a show, somebody would stand up and point and disrupt us and say, "Do you know you're doing a show with a racist?" Well, how can you make light of that without appearing to make light of the smudge, smut, and sin of racism itself?
Well, look at him go on that little bicycle.
Frankenstein wanted a shiny new trike.
Leading the prisoners across the bridge to tomorrow.
Hey, here, don't cry about it.
The bridge fell, and the dwarves are all eating.
Oh.
Papa, stop, please.
What stinks of cement and aluminum? Bashed open their skulls and ate up their brains and imagination? Moloch. Solitude,
Moloch.
Filth, ugliness, ash cans and unobtainable dollar, garbage heap of eyebrows and brains, children screaming under the stairways, boys sobbing in armies, old men weeping in the park, Moloch, nightmare of Moloch. Moloch, the loveless, mental Moloch. Moloch, the heavy judger of men. Moloch, the incomprehensible prison. Moloch, the crossbone soulless jailhouse and congress of sorrows. Moloch, whose buildings are judgment. Moloch, the vast stone of war. Moloch, the stunned government. Moloch, whose mind is pure machinery. Moloch, whose blood is running money. Moloch, whose fingers are 10 armies. Moloch, whose breast is a cannibal dynamo. Moloch, whose ear is a smoking tomb. Moloch, whose eyes are 1,000 blind windows. Moloch, whose skyscrapers stand in the long streets like endless Jehovah's. Moloch, whose factories dream and croak in the fog. Moloch, whose smokestacks and antennae crown the cities. Moloch, whose love is endless oil and stone. Moloch, whose soul is electricity and banks. Moloch, whose poverty is a specter of genius. Moloch, whose fate is a cloud of sexless hydrogen. Moloch, whose name is a mine. Moloch, in whom I sit lonely. Moloch, in whom I name angels. Crazy in Moloch. Cocksucker in Moloch. Black love and manless in Moloch. Moloch, who entered my soul early. Moloch, in whom I am a consciousness without a body. Moloch, who burns down the love of the world. Moloch, whom I abandoned. Woke up in Moloch. Light streaming out of the sky. Moloch, Moloch, robot apartments. Invisible suburb, skeleton treasury, demonic mill, blind capital, ghostly bureaucracies, spectral nations, invincible madhouses, granite cocks, monstrous bombs. They broke their backs lifting Moloch to heaven. Pavements, trees, radios, tons, lifting the city to heaven which exists and is everywhere about us. Visions, omens, hallucinations, miracles, ecstasy, gone down the American River. Dreams, adoration, illumination, religion, the whole boatload of sensitive bullshit. Breakthroughs over the river, flips and crucifixions gone down the flood. Pride, epiphany, despair, 10 years animal screams and suicide. Down on the rocks of time. Real holy laughter in the river. They saw it all, wild eyes, the holy yell. They bade farewell. They jumped off the roof to solitude, waving, carrying flowers down the river into the streets.
That was Moloch, the section of the poem Howl by Allen Ginsberg, as spoken by the author. This was, I believe, in 1969. I saw him there with Peter Orlovsky at the University of Arizona when he came to the IWD. Clicking sounds which I do not care for. It always used to be that Chicken John, who I mentioned a little while ago, would accuse K-Rob of manufacturing clicking sounds. But there's no K-Rob here, nor is that the point of origin for them. And sullen Moloch fled, hath left in shadows dread his burning idol, all of blackest hue. In vain with cymbals they call the grisly king, in dismal dance about the furnace blue. The brutish gods of Nile as fast, Isis and Oros, and the dog misses. Concern this clickety-click accompaniment. I don't like it, and I'm here doing this. The listeners will leave in droves because all the clicking drove them away. How superior is this to last week when nothing worked or clicked, as the case may be? And now it sounds as if we're sending a Morse code signal. Please stand by. We'll get the result of this in one moment. Someone sending a message from far away. On the indicator, it looks very far away. We'll see if this is a contribution to the show. But what about The Clicking by Stephen King, America's most popular writer? Well, I'm still hearing it. And this bodes ill for the future of a click-free show. Nothing. Nichevo. Well, let's try again. Still happening at the zoo. Burning Man is coming up fast. I'm going to have to devote time to putting together my show out there and other things that are distracting will also be occurring. Jumping Jupiter. My friends here at Radio Valencia, we are trying to put out a decent show, but all of these electronic glitches are certainly sapping my energy. Still, let us see if we can push on and do some of the things we planned. Remember, to do the story of Sinbad's sixth voyage. A voice from out the darkness. If only it were. Alas, I fear the worst. What would make it stop? Not killing my microphone. Not killing the auxiliary microphone. Killing DJ Otto. That does it. Well, it's leaking in somewhere. As music leaked in one of my recent shows, music whose origin I could not pinpoint. It sounded almost like music that I might play, but I was not able to get a delicious repast or a rotted fish head with accusing, staring eyes.
Dustbin.
The dustbin, yes. The dustbin of history. That's where all this stuff belongs. I'm cutting off the lead to the automatic feed. Cutting off the lead to the automatic feed. And maybe that's the deed by which I will be freed from the horrible clicking and incessant ticking, which I neither like nor need. The whole sound went down again right after. What, Pilgrim? You mean I wasn't even talking to anybody? X is nigh. I'm going anywhere for X Day this year. But I do have Zoom link with a Subgenius Bible in Prague, which is being set up by my people on the Ask Dr. Hal Show. Meanwhile, the Ask Dr. Hal Show, the home edition, Zoom and Twitch version is scheduled to happen on the 15th of this month, June, at 6 o'clock. We have most interesting things to present and promulgate, including Reptilicus versus Fulgus. Too difficult to explain. I wrote an essay on it, which is on my page on Facebook. And that is at Hey Cypress Robbins, my full name, middle name, S-C-I-F-E-S. That's a Facebook home page where homely homilies are often distributed by me. And pictures of the heads of long-extinct plesiosaurs, which I recently posted, have excited much attention. You never know what will cause people to say, ooh, I like that, or that off the page. And all it tells about all of this, on July 5th, we have the A podcast. In the meantime, my people on the Ask Dr. Hal Show, the home edition, have prepared for things, and I received a package from them containing Ask Dr. Hal swag. Now, I don't know what we're going to do with this. One of them is a marijuana rolling tray with art by me made of metal. What we're going to sell or distribute, it is necessary in this day of transaction politics and mercantile consciousness to have some solid object to send to those who help the show with donations or simply with attendance. How this is done is a mystery and not up to me, but they are really going out with them. Why did they see only one of those trays? Oh, it occurred to me, who rolls dope trays anymore? You need dope with seeds. Everybody has these buds. But aside from that, we wouldn't be the first one to offer a useless product. And sometimes the uselessness attracts the buyer. That would be wonderful. I'm sure he takes whatever leprosy this station has. I need someone to bail me out who has digital dexterity. Not just his dexterous digits, but an understanding of the digital world. How are connected. I wish he could have been the ripping angel to descend Palestine when I had to cut the whole damn thing off. Now he's going to be here in less than an hour. I wonder if I should begin the relation of Sinbad's voyage. One hardly knows how to navigate against such jagged, destroying rocks. And I do hear the clickings. Well, ironic that came the clicks. I've checked all the connections. That's the thing you do. It sounded like I had no microphone, but of course that was a faulty headphone cord, which I have managed to put in a position where, if I don't touch it, gives me enough feedback to know that things are proceeding more or less as they should be. Why did the box disappear? Yes, I hear at least a half hour before K-Ross. Well, can we have Bad's adventures with the irritating clicking and king? They did not honey, the original relation of the glories.
So when you touch your can I feel that on my end?
Put your hands on your screen.
Oh, kind of sexual.
Good. What would you put inside that?
The gentleman has brought in. He's brought in the brain scan. So I saw this. I think this is
my oh, yeah.
Lazies and genitals.
Oh, wait, you got it?
Yeah. Come on, baby. Burn it, mom.
If you took this,
however, the microwave would spark. That's the cool part.
That'd be
That's what I thought.
I tell you this, when rising from the goal, the flaming boulders of a fall of heaven, Barwin and Mushe flung in my predestined plot of earth soul. So what I should is simply come and all Sinbad's story. Wait for K-Rob to arrive. Perhaps the annoying clicking subside during that. I wouldn't bet the farm on it. To speak of the sixth voyage of Sinbad the Sailor. Now on the third voyage, encountered a hideous man-eating cyclops. On the first voyage, a sea monster unthinkably vast size. That's coming back. But, spoiler alert, you can't go out in a ship in his world without encountering grotesque monsters. Created by nature, Allah, in a fit of irritation. Voyage of Sinbadler. Companions and dins, dear guests, I was sitting, taking the air at my door, and feeling happy as I had ever felt, when a group of merchants, they were passing and had every appearance of returned travelers. This sight recalled to me the joyful thing it is to return journeying, to see the birth after far voyage, and the thought made me long again. I equipped myself with merchandise of suitable for the sea and left the city of Baghdad for Bassorah. There I found a great ship filled. So I had my bills carried and soon peacefully set sail from Bassorah. From place to place, city to city, buying and singing and rejoicing in the new sights which met our gaze. But one day, after lying on the deck with a perfect safety, heard despairing cries and looking that they were uttered by Arden, who also threw her bun away from him and, beating him in the face, pulled out half of his beard, clustered round him, asking what the matter. Then he answered, all gear assembled, learn that been driven from the seas into an unknown ocean, where surely. So saying, captain climbed the mast and took from the sails. Great wind arose and striking us full in, broke our rudder to pieces just as we were passing mountain. The captain swarmed down the mast, crying, there no power or might save in Allah. None can arrest of destiny. My friends, we are all together. While the passengers were weeping and farewell to each other, the rose in her fury and broke our fragments against the mountain spoken. We were all thrown into water, where some were drowned, and others, among whom were able to save themselves by clinging to the legs. Now the mountain rose straight up from the end of a large ivory covetsome. The place where landed was strewn multitude of bale from which merchandise and costments had escaped. I walked among these scattered treasures and soon found a river of fresh water, which, instead of flowing into the sea, all other rivers came from a in the mountain and running in last plunged to a cave of it disappeared. Oh, was that all? The of this stream were thick with rubies and other precious stones, all crumbling with diamonds, pieces of gold and silver. Also, its bed were with gems beyond price, instead of pebbles, and the whole beneath and beside the water eased with the ripple up to the water. In this island, beam of raw liquid amber of the color of tar, which flowed down the shore, being to consistency of wax by the rays of the sun. Great fish out of the sea, and drinkly booping this substance, which heated their belly, so that after a certain time they would, upon the surface of the water, came hard and changed both air and color. At last it back to the beach in the form of grease, which scented the island. The liquid which the fish did not swallow also spread perfume of musk about them. All these riches were useless, and because those of us who had been saved remained in full case on the beach, desolate in middle of great wealth and starving material for many feasts. Food, as he had, was scrupulous, but my companion used, like myself, the horrors of starvation, their shares in one or two meals, and began to die off in a few days. I'm more careful, eating and only once a day. Also, I separate the provision, of which I said no to my friends. We who lived washed those who died and in shrouds made up of the ricks which strewed the shore, buried them in the sand. To add to the hard survivors, a sick belly broke, dies diarrhea, and I dug with my own hand a grave for the life of my companions. In prudent attention, little of my food remained, so seeing that death was not far off, I wept and cried aloud, "Ah, why did you wash you new earth? There no power or might save in Allah." Then I began to bite the hands of my despair. I rose and dug a deep grave for myself, saying, "When I feel my last moment is at hand, I drag myself here and die in my grave. For surely the wind will bury me with sand." As I was engaged this work, I cursed myself bitterly for my foolishness in voying again, after having learned 5 times that death, had you not enough riches laid by in Baghdad, suffice for the most reckless expenditure throughout 2 lifetimes? To these thoughts succeeded a more practical one, suggested by the appearance of the river. "As Allah lives," I thought, "this stream must have both a beginning and an end. Now I see the beginning, but the end is hidden from me. The water flows below the mountain. Therefore, I will wager that it comes out the other side in one fashion or another. If that is so, my only hope of escape is to construct some kind of a vessel which will bear me down the current of the stream and through its subterranean course. I did that once before, and it worked out. If such is my destiny, I'll find a way of safety beyond. If I don't, I collect larger branches of the Chinese and Comorin aloes and bound them together with cords. Using this as a foundation, I built a raft with ship's books and furnishings, which was nearly, but not quite, as broad as the river. Then I loaded the raft with some large sacks of emeralds, pearls, and other stones, choosing always the biggest from the heaps which served me. I also placed on board some bales of chosen ambergris and the rest of my provision. When the craft balanced well, I went on board, carrying 2 planks by ways of oar, and confided myself to Allah, remembering those words of the poet, "Out of the country oppression, part and save your spirit whole. There are 1,000 lands and but 1 soul. So leave the land and keep the souls of the sages. Stay at home and let your soul advise you." My raft was hurried by the current under the arch of the cave, and at once began to bang against the sides violently, while my head often came to contact with a rocky roof which I could not see because of the sudden darkness. Very soon I wished that I could return to the sands of my starvation, but the current grew stronger, stronger, as I descended the underground river, and the course of it sometimes wide and sometimes narrow, so that the moving shadows thickened me and confused my eyes. Leave go of my useless oars, I threw myself flat down upon the raft to save my head from being crushed by any projection, and, worn out by fear and exhaustion, fell in. This slip, or swoon, of mine seemed to last for more than a year. When I came to myself, I was in daylight, and opening my eyes, saw that I was lying upon the grass in a vast act of meadow land, and that my raft was found by the side of a river. About me were many Indians, Abyssinians. When these men saw that I was awake, began to speak to me, but I could understand their language, and could not answer them. I thought I was in a dream, until a man towards me who wished me peace in Arabic, saying, "Who are you? And where have you come from, and why have you journeyed to our country?" "We are farmers who, arriving to water our fields and plantations in this place, saw you come downstream asleep upon a raft, which we stopped to adventure you of this place." "As Allah lives, master," I answered, "first give me something to eat, for I am starving." Then ask me as many questions as you like. The man hastening me food, and I ate till I was satisfied and strengthened. Feeling my soul back to its body, I thank Allah and congratulate myself upon my escape from the underground river. Then I told the men who surrounded me the whole story of my adventures on the island. They marveled much at what they heard and began talking together their unknown tongue. And he who spoke Arabic translated their thoughts to me as he had translated tale to them. It appeared that they wished to conduct me to king, that he might. He led me to the carrying with them my raft, just as it was, loaded with ambergris and with sacks of jewel. King kindly received me. At his request, I gave a complete recital of all that had happened to me, without omitting a single detail. But it would be useless to repeat at this place, since you who listen already heard it. The king of Serendib, for such was the island, congratulated heartily upon having come alive out of perils, and in return hastened to open my bales and sacks in his presence, that he'd see that there was profit attached to strange and fantastic voyage. The king heard my collection, for he was learned in the matter of precious stones, and was pleased to eat samples which I offered him of every kind of jewel. Together with he loaded with army lodging palace, so that from that was his friend, and the friend of nobles in the island. They asked me about own country. I described to them, questioned them about this, and received interesting answers. I learned that the Isle of Serendib was 24 parasangs long by 20 wide, that it held the highest mountain in the whole on which our Adam had lived for certain days, and that it was rich in pearls and precious stones, though not so fine as mine, and many coconut palms. One day, the king of Indib questioned me concerning internal affairs of Baghdad. The government of the Caliphate marveled at what I told him and said, I see the Caliphate is versed in wisdom and the true art of government. I have conceived an affection for him through the account you have given me. Therefore, I am very anxious to send him a present worthy of himself and appoint you the bearer of it. I am entirely at orders, my master, I answered. I swear that I will faithfully remit gift to the Caliph, and that he will be haunted by it. I will also say that you are a good friend, and they count on your alliance. Without delay, the Caliph orders to his chamberlains. The present which he sent by me to Al-Rashid consisted of a large, half a foot high and a finger thick of nuts, made from the skin of a gigantic serpent with scales as large as a dinar, and having this virtue, that whatsoever man lay down upon it should be healed. 200 balls of camphor in its purest state, which is large as a pistachio. 2 elephant's tusks, 12 cubits, and 2 cubits of ice. And lastly, a beautiful girl of Serendib, smothered in rich jewelry. At the same time, the king gave me a letter for the Come of the Faithful, saying, make excuses to the Caliphate for so small a present, and tell him love him with all my heart. Yet, Sindbad, if you would stay in our kingdom, you shall in everything our favorite, and send another message about the But the boat just starting for Bassorah, and I'm very anxious to go aboard her and see my children and my native land once more. The king, who did not constrain me against my will, once sent for the captain of the ship, and the merchants, who would sail with me, and gave me into their safe keeping with 1,000 recommendations, paid passage money himself, and present me with many precious gifts I still keep in memory of him. After saying farewell to the king and to all the friends whom I had made at delightful island, sail, and it came through the mercy of Allah safely to Bassorah, and thence to Baghdad, and entrusted, told him all my adventures from beginning to end. And the Caliphate had read the letter of the king of Serendib, an exact presence. He asked me if the monk who had sent them was really as these things seemed to imply. Oh, commander of the full, I answered. I witness that the king of Sereb does not exaggerate, and further, that he adds wealth both justice and wisdom. He is the sole Cadi's kingdom, and the people are so content that there is never friction them and their ruler. Indeed, he is of your friendship, O king. What you have told me, the letter which I have just read, earned the caliphate, proved that the king of Serendib is a man, filled with privileges, and after reward with privileges, commanded the scribes of his palace to write all my story, that it be treasured in the paper his reign. I hastened to my own house, in my own street, and there, surrounded by rich respect, my friends and relations, quite forgetting my past trouble, and having no other care, squeeze from this life all the joys of which it is capable. Such is the story of my sixth voyage. Next week, dear guests, if Allah wills, I will tell you the tale of my seventh voyage, which is of astonishing prodigies than the other six put together. Then he said, marveling at all he had heard. Next morning, Sindbad the landsman made air and returned as he had been asked to the place of the other Sindbad. All the guests were assembled and had drunken, chatted, laughed to fair music. They ranged themselves in a silent circle around their host, who told them of the seventh and last voyage, which we'll relate upon the next time, our next meeting.
You land him. Make him. I don't know how to do this. You think?
This is the tech team that's in there.
Now I have to look at that massive
thing that makes day-to-day life and long-term unbelievable.
And let us hope that K-Rob appears to de-clickify us. For the time to continue the sacred annals of the Church of the Yes, as the true July 1998 approaches. We know not the actual year and the month itself in approximation, and yet the favor of J.R. Bob Dobbs shall on us lilacues of pipe. And we will achieve slack, which is the virtue of slack production. Now let's just continue. We spoke our last show last week, but the show before sundering of Atlantis, the archipelago, say, of the islands which up that ocean, the island of Atlantis was, as it were, the big. These people really advanced in the arts and science, and they were the god of the sea, Poseidon. Poseidon not rules the oceans, but is also the very spirit of earthquakes. And this proved to be a somewhat fortunate chore for the residents of Atlantis, since earthquakes caused the subsidence of the islands, including, finally, the Isle of Atlantis itself, which Plato has described.